Audio courtesy of ESPN. Good morning, everybody. Anthony Lima is out. Daryl Ryder is in. The Cavaliers have made picks. Hi, Daryl.
Morning, Ken. I didn't even realize there was a draft last night until about 8 o'clock.
No, you didn't. Come on. You're a sportsman. You know about this stuff. You knew about the draft. They didn't have a pick the night before, so you had to be looking forward to tonight. Yeah. In some regard, Tyrese Proctor. I did this the night of the one draft where they took Deion Waiters, and I kept wanting to call him Deion Wagner. I keep wanting to call Tyrese Proctor Tyrese Maxey, and I don't know why. It's not even close. Tyrese Proctor's a guy I've actually heard of.
That's all right. I called Dylan Gabriel Taylor Gabriel occasionally.
Yes. That happens. You're going to have that. But at least it's like the same kind of close name and everything like that.
At least he didn't get trapped underneath the giant parka. Taylor Gabriel at the jersey reveal.
Oh, that's right.
Could not get out of the giant parka.
I was like, is he confused with Prada Wheat? I go, no. He couldn't get out of the
giant
parka.
There's been a lot of Cleveland Browns trapped under a lot of different cloth.
Yeah. Good point.
And quarterbacks under defensive linemen.
I've never heard of Saliu Niang, so I'm not going to pretend I have. That's what Mike DeCourcy's for from the Sporting News at 8:20. I want to ask him about some of the things that are going on with the NBA draft and the Cavs who got two picks last night, because it seems that Tyrese Proctor will be on this roster, as you heard in the open. We'll probably be able to help out. Mike Ganzi actually spoke about that. He is the general manager of your Cleveland Cavaliers. I know we always say Kobe Altman. Kobe Altman's a team president. Mike Ganzi is the general manager. He spoke yesterday, and this is what he said about Tyrese Proctor, who the Cavaliers took with their first pick in the second round.
You know, he can really shoot. You know, this year was a career high, 40%. You can't have enough ball handlers. You know, obviously he can play on and off the ball, which is attractive. You can run him off screens. He can play pick and roll. You know, he can get in the paint. He's got a good mid-range game. He makes plays for others. And he's 6'5", you know, and he's 21, too.
Mike Ganzi, local guy, so you better be careful about what you're saying about him there, Daryl. he also did go on and was asked, and this is a good question, I think, does Proctor change at all how the Cavs will approach Ty Jerome and Sam Merrill?
I don't think it changes it much at all. You know, I think with this pick, we were just going to take the best talent there and then the guy we like the most. And, you know, Tyrese was that guy and can't have enough ball handlers. And he's 21. He's still got a lot of upside. We're excited for him to, you know, work with Kenny and his group and get him in here and just kind of see what happens.
There's another interesting little piece of the pie coming up here in just a moment there. But you know, going back to that, you know, they're in a weird spot because these are more developmental players. I know that we got excited about Amani Bates, who, you know, in the G League showed some flashes and definitely needs some more seasoning, but there might be a little bit of a future there with that man. When it comes to Tyrese Proctor, you know, you're at a team that the draft is just not exciting for anybody because you're a team that's based on playoff performance and I should say lack thereof, and how they're going to be able to get over that hump in the future. I think that that's what a lot of people are worried about. So the draft, it doesn't make a whole lot of waves, but a guy like Tyrese Proctor might be able to help out down the line because, you know, that has to be one of the questions is where if you're not going to be able to make a huge trade, and I don't think that they're probably going to be able to, Daryl, you know, the Ty Jerome, Sam Merrill conversation does get brought in, but, I mean, you have NBA-ready players on your roster. You have to figure out what you want to do with these guys and what their future is going to be, whether it's with your franchise or not with your franchise during this next month. So they're in an interesting spot right now where they could become even a little bit more top-heavy than they already are.
Well, the challenging thing with Sam Merrill and Ty Jerome are bringing them back. It's not just about what salary you pay them. It's the tax penalty that you have to tack on top of that. You know, Ty Jerome could, you know, let's say you brought him back for $15 million. He could actually cost you $70 million, though. It's 15 in salary, but then you have to pay the penalty on top of that because you're so far over that second apron. So the Cavaliers are in a position right now, Ken, where they have to find value in some of these second round picks, because the reason they haven't had any first round picks and they're not going to have any first round picks for a little while is they traded for Donovan Mitchell. And so you have to understand that. And I think folks do understand that. But the challenge for Ganzi, as well as Kobe Altman, is to find some value somewhere. And look, it's the advantage of having the Cleveland Charge here. You can work with those kids organizationally within your own building. It's a lot easier than having them down in Canton where you're separated from the NBA club. And, you know, maybe Proctor's a kid that they are able to develop with the Charge here in the first half of the season. And maybe the second half of the season, he can help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Or he helps you out, maybe not so much this coming season, Ken, but the following year. So, and of course, Niang, they're going to stash over in Europe. And, you know, you never know. A year or two or three down the line, maybe he can help your roster out. So last night was all about just trying to find some value help to round out the very back end of this roster.
You mentioned the tax penalty as well. I think that this needs to be brought in. Because it's a question. I don't know if it's a theory yet. There was a story that came out. Sportico had a story that came out yesterday that Dan Gilbert is exploring selling 15% of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he has retained Allen & Company, I believe, which is a bank, to start to explore who could be a buyer of 15% of the organization, which is a considerable amount when you consider that the there's two different valuations. One, in the Sportico story itself, has the team valued at just under $4 billion. CNBC in February of this year ranked the Cavs at $4.35 billion. So a 15% stake... I do Steiner math. I don't do the other math, the actual math. It says it's approximately $652 million. Now, I think I would have a question on this, and I wouldn't have an answer because I have to figure out where they want to go with it. Is it like what the Guardians did when they brought in John Sherman, right?
David Blitzer.
No. Beforehand in 2015-16, yeah, that was John Sherman before he bought the Royals. Yeah. Sorry. Because he was the one who kind of helped out with, hey, we're going to take this thing to the next level and we're going to go quote-unquote all in and get some of these players here. Is that an investment that helps alleviate the tax penalty of what they have? Because you're seeing this around the league is where you notice like, okay, this is... Go with me on this because this is going to be a little bit difficult. You're seeing guys run the arenas. And because of the second apron, because of the exorbitant tax penalties that they have to pay, which is even more than the old days, they're looking for ways to fill dates. They're looking for ways to alleviate any tax penalty they can so they can be one of the very competitive teams so they can keep drawing money and making money, but they obviously don't want to pay the tax penalty. So that's one of the reasons a lot of people say why the Golden State Valkyries exist over in Golden State. You got this brand new opulent arena. You want to fill dates. Dates are dates. They got a WNBA franchise. You look over here. Dan Gilbert's a pretty good businessman.
He's got the Monsters.
Yes, his family's pretty good businessmen, good business people. He's got the Monsters already, which help fill a lot of dates. You have summer there. Well, can we get the Cleveland Rockers going again? And obviously that's been heavily rumored and not a done deal, but it looks like it could be very well coming to fruition at some point soon here. So when you take on another buyer, when you take on another person who has a percentage, you know, I'm wondering, does it help alleviate a tax penalty? Because you want to remain a competitive team, but you also do not want to operate into the red. I know he's worth, what, $32 billion or whatever the hell it is. I mean, it's an incredible amount of money.
Right.
But you're still going to try to operate as a business as best you can.
Well, he paid just shy of $400 million for the franchise, and he's going to get...
Just over $375 million, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, yeah, just short.
So,
boy, it's a long time. 20 years. He's on the Cavs for 20 years.
Absolutely. And based on a $4 billion valuation of the franchise, he's looking at $600 million mm-hmm. that he's going to get for that 15%. That's certainly a way to raise significant cash in rather rapid fashion. I've even said the Haslams should consider selling 10% of the Browns that they would be allowed to do under the new NFL ownership guidelines. So they could raise a quick $500 million to, you know, put toward the whether it's the stadium or whatever they need. So this is a quick way that Dan Gilbert can, to your point, Ken, raise some liquidity with the franchise. It'll certainly help with the tax. Dan has never been shy about spending money. The year they won the NBA championship, I don't know if folks remember this, but organizationally, the Cavaliers actually lost money that year. They won the NBA title and they lost tens of millions of dollars.
Well, that's the way it was. You know, it seemed to be that was the way in the 90s and early 2000s, right, where if you really wanted to win, you had to lose money for the year.
Well, the Jacobs family, when they owned the Indians back in the 90s, and I remember when those teams' payrolls were approaching $90 to $100 million, they were right there with the New York Yankees, but they were still turning a profit because the building was sold out every night.
Yeah.
Merchandising was off the chain, and Jacobs always had his profit margin that was built in. Hey, we have to clear this much money each and every year for this to continue to work. And then the Dolans, when they bought the team from Jacobs, you know, they tried to operate it like fans. Hey, let's go sign Juan Gonzalez for $10 million. Let's sign this guy for another $8 million. And then they realized real fast, yeah, we can't spend money like that. All of a sudden, we have to run this thing like a business. So Dan Gilbert's got the financial backing to be able to absorb the tax hits. And he, as long as he's able to compete for championships, he'll spend whatever it takes, but certainly selling 15% of the team, that's a quick way to raise about $600 million.
No, it'll certainly help out. And again, if this is the new CBA, and it looks like this is going to be the new CBA for a while here, is you want to find a way to be a competitive team, a really competitive team, but to be part of that, like you are a top-heavy organization. Because we said, like, hey, if you really wanted to trade for Jaylen Brown and you wanted to get nuts, you could get nuts. But I was talking to Justin Rowan, the Chase down, and he's like, well, you can play with eight guys because that's basically what your yeah, what your salary is. So if you have an eight-man rotation and your roster is just eight people, then you could possibly get it done. Or you could add on investors, and it's harder and harder to do so because the teams are worth more and more and more and more and more, and we only have so many billionaires out there that can afford to buy in for 15%, because I think there's got to be some billionaires out there going, why do I want to settle for 15 when I can get 51 from somewhere else? I think that that's a conversation that is down the line, but go ahead.
When the Haslams bought into the Milwaukee Bucks, they I believe they bought 25%,
yes,
and for that 25%, they got 100% of the Cleveland Browns. Like, they almost paid, it was about $100 million shy, it was $800-plus million they paid, yep, for that 25% of the Bucks. Meanwhile, they paid just shy of $1 billion for 100% of the Browns. That just right there, Ken, explains, to your point, how fast the valuations, yeah, of these franchises has just absolutely exploded in recent years.
There's another big part of this, though, that is very interesting here. Mike Yanzi, it seemed there were a lot of people that seemed to be, you always want some action, whether it's good or not, whether it's prudent or not, you always want a little bit of action. Well, it's easier said than done. He actually said he was asked whether or not the Cavaliers, this is general manager Mike Yanzi, whether or not the Cavaliers looked into moving back into the first round.
Well, that first round, we're always active. I mean, you guys know Kobe very well, you know, so we're always in the mix for everything. You know, we're going to make those calls, and we want to know what's going on, because if there's an opportunity to strike, you know, we want to do it and be aggressive, and, you know, nothing obviously transpired.
I'm not, you shouldn't be surprised. I don't think anybody's surprised. I'm in a spot now, and this is where Mike DeCourcy comes in at 8:20. We're very well versed in the NFL draft, all of us here in Cleveland. And the NFL draft is the biggest draft of all the drafts combined. But in the NBA, I'm going, well, are there guys worthy of moving up into the first round for? It's like, well, hey, you don't know that. You don't know that. I mean, but a lot of people just heard of Ace Bailey last week and a half over the stuff that was going on. There's a couple of names that pop out just because you watch SportsCenter throughout the year. Or I leave on, honestly, some of the names I figure out just because John Fanta does some play-by-play over at Fox Sports, and he does a lot of Big East basketball games. And so I will, as a buddy of John and a fan of John, I turn John on, and he's doing Providence Friar basketball, and then he'll out-of-conference Rutgers basketball, so you learn about those guys. But that's about it. So I don't know exactly what's worth moving up into the first round this year, because I got to tell you, the level of watching college basketball has dropped off considerably here, where it was like, okay, they know who Cooper Flagg is, but who the hell is everybody else? Yeah. And again, I knew who Tyrese Proctor was just because he was Cooper Flagg's teammate, just because he played for one of the biggest brands in college basketball. But if he went to, frankly, if he went to Maryland even, if he went to a lot of other places, I'd be doing a lot of making up for it right now. Because, hell, we were looking into whether or not they were going to take Cam Jones or Bryce Williams, the one kid out of Nebraska and Cam Jones, a kid out of Marquette, if they were going to do that. But yeah, I think that this is he's a guy who could possibly help. There's not much that they can do. And it's still, hey, what are you going to do, be able to do with your core four on this? Browns are moving to Brook Park, it seems. Just got to get the Herbie Hancock from the governor on everything. And then it'll be shovels in the ground and everything coming up in February. Daryl joined us yesterday. He's co-host with me today. Lima back on Monday after he's been home all week with his children, where they've been screaming in the background. He calls me. He didn't call me yesterday, but he called me the first 3 days of the week. And they
desperate
start
for help?
No, I ain't helping him. He's on his own. If I can do three, he can have two. He can do it with two, and that's fine. The hell with him. He's an interesting character as of this moment, and everything just seems to be. I just always think that there's a fire starting in the background somewhere, and he goes, "I gotta go," and he just hangs up, and then that's it. Because I heard he was on the phone with me. He's making some big political point on Wednesday, and then he's like, "Where'd the cookie go?" And I can hear his daughter in the background start screaming. He goes, "Oh, I gotta go." Hangs up. Goodbye. Like that's it. He's very abrupt on these things. So that's the last time I talked to him. I hope everybody's okay at the Lima household.
The joys of fatherhood.
But Zach Miles is going to join us at 7:45 or 7:40. We will be talking Guardians coming up at 6:43. Browns moved to Brook Park again. Daryl was with us yesterday. Daryl laid it all out, all the specifics. Seems that they could buy. When could they officially buy 176 acres in Brook Park?
That should happen today.
Today. Wow. Today's the day. We're buying 176 acres over there. Wow. Okay.
They officially have to have the deal closed by Monday, but I was told they want to get that done today. So they should close on it today. It'll be their land, and then they can move forward.
So Jason and I had it out about the stadium yesterday, the current stadium yesterday, and you and I will get into that later. But the Browns are moving to the adjacent city. The Bengals were thinking about moving away altogether. They've come up with an agreement. I know that this was brought up in the 2020s yesterday. But the Bengals and their officials down there with Hamilton County came together on a deal tentatively for $470 million in renovations to their stadium, Paycor Stadium, that'll keep them there for the next 11 years. Now, all things aside, I don't want any team to move from a city. You know, I like the roots. Once you're there, you're there. I don't root for – I know we make jokes about Cincinnati and TV carts and – duct tape and
being part of Kentucky.
Yeah, and I know that Mike Brown is certainly a frugal owner.
That's one way to put it.
In so many ways. Hey, say what you want to about the Browns' ownership, but they will spend that money.
He's definitely not putting $2.3 billion into a stadium project for sure.
But I know we make a lot of jokes, but at the same time, I certainly don't want the Bengals to move. But the thing is, I don't know many Bengals fans, personally. And I've said this on the air. Who?
Mark Schwab from Channel 19.
Oh, hell, I didn't even think about him. That's okay. So I think I might know four Bengals fans off the top of my head. Hell, sorry, Schwabby, I didn't even think about you, bud. All right, so there's four I can think of off the top. One is our former intern, Spider, who I think he works for the state of Tennessee now. So you got Chris, and I got Schwab, and the other two.
Congratulations on all your success.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention them, yeah. Chris is doing well for himself down there. I don't think that they're a rival. I think that the Steelers, I don't know if Steelers fans think they're a rival, but I think that we're so close to each other. I think that we like to egg each other on no matter what. So I do find them to be a rival. But it was brought up like with Nick Chubb. If Nick Chubb ended up with the Bengals, it'd be a little weird. It doesn't matter the Bengals compared to the Steelers. I think that the Bengals fans hate us way more. I rarely think of the Bengals in terms of their fan base, in terms of agitation. I have respect for Joe Burrow.
Yeah, you're not going on any radio shows in Cincinnati to troll any talk show hosts down there.
No. I mean, Mo Egger's too nice, and James ain't mean like Pony is. So
it's
not going to work out that way.
And James is also more right than Pony is. Then again, I think this pen is more right than Pony
is. And oddly enough, I get along very well with Ken Wyman and Bob Haney at 105.7 The Fan over in, and Vinny Serrato for that matter, over there at 105.7 The Fan over there in Baltimore. But I don't think of him as a rival. And I don't think that Browns fans think of him as a rival. And the reason I know that we don't think of them as a rival, would anybody have rooted for Joe Burrow if he were playing for the Ravens or Steelers in the Super Bowl?
Absolutely not.
But they were rooting for Joe Burrow and the Bengals. The Ohio Bengals when he was playing for the Bengals in the Super Bowl. So you know how you feel about the Bengals right there if you're willing to put it aside because, hey, you know, he's an Ohio State guy, even though he went to LSU. He's an Ohio State guy. All the reasons that you give it, you wouldn't have done that with because you don't do that. You didn't do that. Did you do that with Cam Hayward? I mean, I think there's a respect for Cam Hayward.
You didn't do it with Joe Flacco. You didn't do it with
Where's Joe Flacco from? Is he from Philly area or something like that? I think he's from. Where's he from?
Somewhere over there.
Yeah. And Joe Flacco went to Delaware. But he started at Pitt.
But I'm just saying, when Flacco had the Ravens in the Super Bowl, and nobody was rooting for him.
No,
you know.
But you know, Burrow's technically he's an Ohio guy. He's not a local guy. Good God, the planes are 4 hours away. And I just don't think of them as a rival. And I thought, man, I would never take any joy out of them leaving, even though I don't find them to be a vicious, strong, and boy, I'm dealing with a vicious fan base right now in another sport. I don't find them to be a vicious fan base by any means. Like when I see Steelers fans, they rip me, I laugh. I see Bengals fans, if they rip me, I just kind of
roll your eyes.
No, I just kind of go about my day. It really doesn't bother me. Like I will sit there and I will read some of the hate after a pony call that I get,
right?
And like, you know, have your heart attack and die. It just goes into this long thing. And I screenshot it and I send it to Pony and I laugh and laugh and laugh because, I mean, those I enjoy trolling those folks. But when it comes to Cincinnati, I'm not bothered by Cincinnati.
By the way, their Sunday tailgate scene before games, weak sauce.
Is it really?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine. Well, there's not a lot of room down there, is there?
They're all in church. Like, tailgating starts like at 11.
Oh jeez!
Like up here, you know, I get to the stadium for Browns games around you know 9:30. You drive by the Muni line; it's usually
waiting to go in. Yeah,
you get to the Bengals stadium at 9:30. There's nobody in the parking lots.
It's a weird mix down there. But at the same time, I don't want any team to move.
Kentucky effect.
I don't want any team to move. It does make me worry about even 2036 because it's the thing that I wanted to avoid with our stadium stuff. I can't deny that the stadium was built quickly and built on the cheap. It was both of those things. After the renovation that Joe Banner had spearheaded, I thought that it wasn't going to be enough. And I don't think that I'm breaking any news here. I think a lot of people didn't feel it was going to be enough. And we were just putting lipstick on the hog until we were going to ask for a new stadium here.
I said that at the time.
Yes.
I came up with the Brook Park thing 12 years ago.
I remember Nick Fink brought that up years ago. Nick Fink, if he's out there, what a guy. And I'm just like, man, the thing I get out of, and I know that there's some tug and pull here, but the thing I get out of this is that I get 30 years where I don't have to worry about it.
Nope.
Okay, it'll be built. We'll see how it works out. I'll get to see what the city of Cleveland gets to do with that land over there. I do think that the Browns, probably it's a very good PR thing to help them tear the stadium down and clear it out, and then you guys do what you guys do. But when it comes to like Cincinnati, like I'm just thinking, man, you guys are the renderings that I saw. It's exactly what you said during the break. It's kind of like,
It's just a ripoff of what the Browns did to the stadium when Banner did that renovation.
Yeah.
They tore out or remodified the second decks in the end zones, which by the way, down there is like one of the few architectural features of that place. Cause it's supposed to look like the claws of a Bengal cat. The way the stand,
are you
the, serious? the current staff. Yeah, I'm dead serious.
I mean, I've been there and I never noticed.
Yeah, they designed it so that you know with the way it's curved
really?
And the exits are laid out, it's supposed to look like the claws of a Bengal cat. You know, they're gonna like cut all that off and put you know layers on top of it and stuff. But yeah, it's nothing spectacular. And also, too, a lot of what that they wanted to do to that stadium, it was supposed to be $800+ million. They have scaled it back tremendously. It's almost like what the Guardians did at Progressive Field.
Yeah.
Guardians wanted to do more to that ballpark than they actually did. They kind of scaled it back a little bit because of construction costs.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bengals scaled back their project a little bit here. And a lot of the work that's going to get done, it's kind of like you renovate the house. Most of your money gets spent behind the walls.
Mm-hmm. Like I look at the Bengals. The Bengals are a rival, but they're not because of you know what the AFC North is.
They're
how
also the
Bengals
one team the Browns
born.
Can beat with any regularity.
Well, yeah. Well, I tell you what, over the last 6-7 years, it's been kind of 50-50 with the Steelers here. Let's call it what it is. They were one of our three wins last season. We got it in the snow. Might have needed the snow, but we got him in the snow, so I'll take that. So it's been a little bit more level here over the last few years, but that's me grasping for straws. I don't find them to be the rival that I think they hate us way more than we hate them. I think we got other things that we worry about up here with our team. But if it's 11 more years, I'm glad it's 11 more years, because the stuff about Austin, Texas, or San Antonio, or any of the other stuff, or London, for crying out loud, I would have felt really bad about that. And I tell you what, like, it's one of those things where you pick up a microphone and you try to get things going there to make sure something like that doesn't happen.
There's no leverage in the NFL right now. Not like about 10 years ago when Los Angeles had zero teams. Like, Los Angeles was the anvil hanging over everybody. You better get your stadium stuff in order, or the team goes to Los Angeles. The NFL doesn't have that right now, and I think that helped the Bengals stand in Cincinnati as well.
Daryl Ryder in for Tone today.
What a bunch of pansies.
Zach Meisel, 7-4. Okay, Daryl Ryder. I was good. Zach Meisel's a 740. All right, Daryl, what are you going to say? I got one guy in the other room. He was there, and he's hot. Oh, look at the look on. We got to get a camera on Owen. You should see the look on his face. Oh, my God in heaven.
I'm Team Owen. Really? Right. That's the best you had, Stephen Vogt? That was the best you had after your franchise player got beaned? That is all you had? By the way, where was the bullpen? What were you guys doing? Taking an afternoon siesta during that whole thing? What are we doing?
If we're not going to hit baseballs and score runs anyway, might as well go spend the day in the shower.
Yeah,
it's time when things like that, when it's a clear retaliation over, and, you know, Vlad Jr. got hit twice in the series. They brought that up in the broadcast. But
it's
a clear retaliation the next inning and they go hit your franchise guy, you better get your ass off the bench and get out there. And that's everybody that's wearing that C on their hat. It's not just Stephen Vogt. If you care about your leader, if you guys are really a tight-knit clubhouse, and you haven't scored runs all season anyway, it's not like any of their bats are working anyway, because those guys can't come up from Columbus to get in the fight for you. Chase DeLauder's not going to get in the fight for you because he's still in Columbus. Get your ass off the bench and get out there. This is the one, these are unwritten rules, and it's the one sport where we still get to do all this, where you still get to get in a little scuffle every once in a while, and everybody goes, well, it's baseball, right?
Well, yeah, but guys get suspended after.
Cool.
Okay.
You really think the Guardians are going to miss anyone if they get suspended?
Show a little pride in the team. Show a little pride in your fellow players.
Oh, Miles Straw plays for the other team now, and everybody loved him because he was cussing out Yankees fans a few years ago. Huh. All right, let me think about
Think about our ball club and who's actually done the sticking up for our players in the last couple of years.
Are you saying
it's one guy, it's down goes Anderson, it's Jose Ramirez.
Okay.
Get your ass out of the dugout and go out there and defend your guy.
All right, do you agree
Stephen
with Owen?
Vogt, turn your hat around and start spitting.
Do you agree
mad.
Do you agree with Owen and Daryl? 216-474-0092. I wasn't going to take the segment this way, but I think I want to take the segment this
Listen,
way.
Listen, it was the Guardians.
It's Friday. I want you to come in hot. We're not doing coming in hot at 9:45 because Lime is not here.
It's also the Blue Jays who, over any team, come and do a takeover of the stadium. I'm tired of their fans. I do not like them. I hope they had a good drive back to Toronto yesterday.
We appreciate them spending their hard-earned money here.
It's time to stick up for the guys. If we're not going to come out and have offense, you might as well not even go spend a couple days away. Then maybe we'll finally get Chase DeLauder and CJ Cephas up here, because they got to fill in for guys who are spending 2 or 3 days in the shower.
Listen, this was the Guardians' first opportunity to finally hit something for the first time in weeks, okay? And they totally blew it.
It's a low blow, Daryl.
Totally blew it.
Now, Dwight, I don't know if I can condone getting thrown out of a game as a manager. That I can condone. And even encourage. 95 degrees outside. They look like they didn't want to be there. They look like they were clocking in.
You know who else didn't
want to
be there?
Work.
My two boys that I took yesterday and went, this is the most boring game I've ever been to. Because we got two stinking hits. One of them was the first at bat of the game that originally was called an out, and they went back and reviewed, and the ball hit the ground. And the other one was a check swing by Manzardo. We got two hits. You got no hit yesterday. If it wasn't for a guy left fielder who ran his ass off, I think it was Lucas, and dove and just barely missed.
Yeah.
And a check swing where the third baseman's playing 15 feet behind third base. You got no hit.
I don't think I can condone a benches clearing brawl.
I didn't say a brawl. I said get off the bench. There's a difference.
Well, once you get off the bench, there's only one other thing left to do. You don't just stand there and chirp at each other.
I'm not saying.
Wait a minute.
This is called covering your bases and checking your ass, all right?
But now you can't just stand there and go, well, I want you guys to come up. You guys can come up to the rail of the dugout. And you guys can go stand.
How many times have benches cleared and nothing happened? It happens a ton in baseball.
Have we had,
what are you talking about?
Okay, that's fair. But I don't think that that's...
I didn't say do a run-in and bring the steel chair with
but you.
Or pick up the U.S. title and start hitting people in the head with
but
it.
But you risk... A brawl. It's the closest thing you can come to a brawl. And it's like you want it to escalate to a point where if one person were to take it to the next level, now you're all swinging at each other. Or at least grabbing each other and shoving each other around. Unless the other, like if Josh Naylor's still on the team and you do that, that's a brawl. That's everybody's fight. Now, I don't know. This is kind of where I'm curious here. So I'm not going to condone such things, but it'd be the first thing that I want to see. They come out of the same area now or the same exit for the bullpen. I know they're supposed to run in from the bullpens. What do they do if they take turns using the
door?
There's a reason
that
how do they do it?
There's a reason
that the
Guardians
have the ground level. Through? How does it go?
The Guardians have the ground level, and the visiting team has to go a whole flight up. You've got time. Let's get your asses out there.
First, a Guardian goes, and now a Blue Jay.
Because
now a Guardian,
it's
now
not
a Blue Jay.
We are not in traffic.
Because you're the home team, do you have to wait and let them all run down the steps, and then you go out? Is that how that... I think
you treat the bullpen like it's the hell in the cell. You go up and you have a separate brawl.
They got their own thing going on up there, is what they got going on. Because if you're using the same hallway, well...
Who's our vocal leader? Austin Hedges. You didn't play yesterday. Get your ass out there. Go be loud.
I got to tell you, though, in the terms of like getting thrown out of the game for something like that, like, you know what? You're playing... You've had how many days? You've had more errors than you had hits.
Twice as many errors as hits.
When you're talking about error day, Kyle Manzardo ain't great in the field anyway. But when you're doing stuff like this, it's really stupid, and it's really starting to take on where it's like, all right, they know that they're getting shaky here, and I would say they're pressing. But when you're committing errors like that, like that's taking your eye off the ball, that becomes lazy. These are high crimes you're accusing the Cleveland Guardians of.
Bo Naylor didn't even realize Kyle Manzardo threw the baseball in his direction.
No, that was as embarrassing as it gets. I don't know what he was doing walking up the first base line. He had no idea the ball was coming down towards him. You had a guy coming down from third base.
Well, I think when Manzardo can't field the pickoff attempt,
so is he just trying to go down there?
And then the ball's 10 feet behind first base. As a catcher, I assume that guy's already home. You're probably not going to wing it home over my head.
No,
Manzardo, you've already aired.
You're right.
Get your ass out there.
They look like a little league team over there. I get that. And that's something a little league team would do. You would freak out and just wing the ball home, even though the guy's already slid into home plate. I get that. You're right. But I don't know why Bo Naylor wasn't paying attention where the ball went. That's for damn sure. It's listless. I can't call it baseball. It's a listless performance. I'll meet you halfway. I think that when you get off the bench...
Why don't you meet me out at home plate?
I'm sorry. If you're meeting out at home plate, there's going to be a scuffle. There's going to be a quagmire here.
Hey,
I can't condone
so
violence.
So be it, Ken.
I can't condone violence. I can condone a manager getting thrown out.
You can condone nobody sticking up for the franchise player.
No.
You're going to condone that?
No, I
can't.
That's
what you're doing there,
no,
Ken.
I'm not going to condone fighting because I don't want to lose anybody for a suspension. But I can condone a manager getting thrown out.
You won't
yelling.
Condone fighting. You'll do it now, but you won't do it in the game.
What do you mean? I won't condone fighting either place. I won't condone fighting here or the game.
You better not.
I mean, if it happens, it happens. They're grown men. I can't stop them from doing everything. But my God, I can't condone that. I mean, we're talking about violence. I thought it was silly for him to throw. Vlad Guerrero Jr. got hit twice in 2 days. all right, and I know he was upset yesterday. I don't think Tanner Bibee did it on purpose. I think you can tell from the body language Tanner Bibee didn't do it on purpose. It was a happenstance, and then they threw at Jose Ramirez. I agree with Stephen Vogt that if you're going to throw at him, hit him in the hip or hit him somewhere else or the thigh. You know, hit the guy in the arm, for crying out loud. But you're throwing at a guy. I don't necessarily know if you can control everywhere it's going because you're not throwing at home plate like you're trying to do 100 times out of the last 101 times, and now you're going to throw at Jose Ramirez. I think it was an asinine thing to do. I thought it was petty, but also I can meet you halfway and say Stephen Vogt should have done something to maybe get himself thrown out to inspire to show he's backing up his team. I can get that. But when it comes to guys coming off the bench or anything like that,
nothing happens in baseball get-togethers, Ken. Very rarely does a guy get dropped. And when there
Go ask Don Zimmer and Pedro Martinez.
Again, that's the exception to the rule. That's the exception to the rule.
Well, here's Stephen Vogt yesterday post-game.
We knew they were going to hit Jose. We knew it was coming, which is part of the game. All I said was, playing this game a long time, been around this game a long time, you're going to hit somebody on purpose, you hit him in the hip, not the arm. He's good. X-rays are negative.
You know what else is part of the game? Manager getting thrown out to show support for his guy.
That I can be with you on. I can do that. I just can't condone guys coming off the bench and possibly getting into a quagmire. I can't condone that.
Would have been the most entertaining part of yesterday's game.
It would have been the most entertaining part of yesterday's game, and we would have talked about it all today.
Well, besides Kyle Manzardo throwing the ball by Bo Naylor, that was pretty entertaining, too. Well, if you're a Blue Jay fan.
I do want to know what the protocol is if they clear the benches at Progressive Field after the renovations.